And actually, on the way, when we were on the way in, there were actually protesters standing in front of the clinic.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. So I just remember walking in and not looking at them and just looking at my feet and just keep walking through. So, yeah.
Can you share a little bit about what you were feeling as you saw them?
I was feeling condemnation.
Oh, yeah.
I knew they were right.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it's wrong to take a life.
Hi, everyone. This is Steve Bang Lee, and you are listening to The Same Boat. Welcome aboard.
This is the podcast that helps you feel you're not alone, that there are others in the same boat as you. I'm Roy Kim, and on today's episode, we're going to be hearing a story about a woman's decision to abort her child. I present to you episode 14, Honor Michael. Let's meet today's guest.
My name is Allison Isaac. I grew up here in Southern California.
Allison is a very busy woman.
I am, thankfully, I get to stay at home. I'm a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. My husband and I have our nephew that we're taking care of, who's 18, and then two other boys who are 14 and 12, so we're pretty busy.
Full
with
house.
That. Yes, full house, and then we have another friend living with us, too, so we're a very full house.
Wow, wait, so three teenage boys?
Three teenage boys. It's a trick keeping them fed and keeping them busy.
Did you go to school down here?
Yes, I went to UCI, mm-hmm. and I got, I studied psychology and social behavior. Then I started working with autistic children, doing ABA therapy. And then I went into getting my teaching credentials at Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And I taught third grade for a few years. And then my kids came, so I've been able to stay home since then.
I asked her what it's like being a mom of a full house.
Oh, being a mom is very humbling. I always loved working with kids. So even when I was a kid, I would ditch Sunday service and go help out with the nursery. And I always had a lot of fun and was told, oh, you're going to be a great mom. But it's hard work. Mm. It is hard work, but it's the best job. Yeah, and also just having boys with disabilities, mm-hmm. just learning to adjust expectations, and in a way it is kind of freeing too, because I could release myself from a lot of expectations.
Because of disabilities?
Yes, because mm-hmm. uh-huh. I'm not going to push him to be the best and brightest. Yeah. I'm going to push him to be the best that he can.
Yeah.
And my push is to give him access to opportunities and education. So that's been my fight.
yeah. Can you describe what kind of disabilities your boys have?
Yeah, my older one has autism, mm-hmm. And he's very sweet. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's very smart. His tricky behaviors is that he can act like he doesn't care about something. So the tricky thing is at school they think, oh, he's not able to do this, or he doesn't have the ability, he doesn't have the attention. But I know he's just blowing them off.
Really?
So that's been the tricky thing
he's
with
crafty.
Him. He is very crafty. He's a lot of fun. And then my younger one, everyone at school loves him. Mm. The teachers love him. But at home, he's butting heads with Dad and I all the time. So we have that that dynamic going on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Now, in our earlier talk, you were saying that you listened to the episode about I think it's entitled How to Raise or Raising an Autistic mm-hmm. Child, right? Mm-hmm. What were some of your thoughts as you listened to that episode?
I remember that I felt like I was listening to my people.
Wow.
In my story. Mm. Yeah.
Was that what kind of impact did it have on you, listening to your people?
It was empowering. It gave me hope because even though it's a hard road, I know it's not because I'm failing. I know it's just a hard road.
Yes.
For everyone.
Yeah. What is your ethnic background?
I'm Chinese American, so I think I'm fourth generation Chinese.
Wow.
I dropped out of Chinese school because I'm sure my parents signed me up for the easiest class, but I just remember it being like completely lost. And I think it was all in Chinese and
total immersion.
So my memory is like the whole room is very dark and it was just like I could just see my workbook in front of me and I was just copying whatever everyone else was doing. And my mom didn't believe me that it was hard. And so finally I convinced her to sit in with me. And after that, she let me quit.
As you can tell, Allison has experiences not too different from your own. She's an intelligent, loving, Chinese-American woman who grew up in the church. She's also going to courageously tell a story about an experience that also will not be too different from your own or someone that you know. The story of an abortion.
My friends would say that, you know, I grew up in a very Norman Rockwell type home, but you know, Chinese, and that kind of that really had a big part also in my decision to have an abortion. Mm. So I was dating a guy. I knew him from high school and throughout college. We were dating off and on.
Yeah.
And I always had a feeling like this is not the guy for me, but he was a lot of fun and we hung out and. Anyways, when I found out I was pregnant, I didn't even realize that's what I was experiencing, morning sickness.
Oh, wow.
So it was during Christmas break of my junior year, I think. And so I was home, and I thought I had the stomach flu because I was just knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would wake up to eat and then shower and go back to bed.
Yeah.
So it was actually 2 days of that, and then my mom came to see me, and she said, she took my temperature, and she said, you know, the last time I felt like this was when I was pregnant. Is that a possibility?
Wow. So, she just straight up said it, huh?
Yes. Yeah. And so that woke me up.
Wow.
And
How'd you feel when she said that?
I was very shocked that... because I didn't consider that at all.
Right.
And for it to just be confronted like that so openly.
Can I ask you why you never even considered that to be a possibility?
Just being a stupid kid, just thinking it would never happen to me.
I mean, did you use protection during the time?
We
did you not
did
use...
sometimes, not all the time.
Not all
so
the time.
I thought it was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Most times of protection would be enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet... Your mom says this, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
You didn't even consider that to be a possibility.
No, no.
So then what happened?
So I told her yes,
uh-huh.
And I think pretty much right away she had offered up the option of, well, she asked what I would want to do, and then she had thought it through beforehand. And so she said, well, you know, we have, our family had a condo in San Diego area.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, if you want to have the baby down there and give him or her up for adoption,
wow.
You know, that would be an option. Or abortion,
mm-hmm.
which shocked me that she would have that growing up in church with her. You know, I was surprised that she would offer that. I feel like, I don't know, she also offered or talked about like maybe keeping the baby.
Keeping the baby,
I kind of feel like that wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
But she left it up to me and kind of left me in that shock. And so I told my boyfriend at the time, and at first we thought, okay, let's keep the baby.
Oh.
We'll figure out a way. We were both in school. And... I remember feeling stuck with him.
Interesting.
That I was stuck with him, yeah. And and just different doubts and fears. What would people say? What would, I wasn't really considering giving the baby up for adoption. I loved being with kids. Mm. I loved children, and I really wanted to be a mom.
If I camp there a little bit, and you know, if you kind of go back into what you were thinking at that time, and you're saying that really wasn't an option for me to give my baby up for adoption. You know, do you remember what that worst? Usually, we think of worst case scenarios, right? So, do you remember what that worst case scenario was as you thought about giving your baby up for adoption?
I mean, it doesn't really make sense because when I chose to have an abortion, I gave up the baby. The baby's not with me.
Right.
So I don't think I have a logical explanation of it.
Yeah.
I think I automatically thought, oh, I'm not going to abort.
Yeah.
So thinking that the other two options would be what I would consider.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, how did I get to where I chose to abort and not give the baby up for? I think I was scared. I think there's, it takes a lot of courage to, even if I were to go away and do, and, you know, have the baby somewhere else.
Sure.
And, it still takes a lot of courage to do that.
Absolutely.
I know of someone that had given up her baby, for adoption, and that takes a lot of courage. You know, I'm very proud of her for what she could do. It wasn't something I could do. So I think I just chose the easy way out. Yeah. I was praying, when I think back, there was probably a couple weeks between when I found out I was pregnant to when we made the appointment, or till I went in for the abortion. And I remember my prayer at that time was to have a miscarriage, because I didn't want to make that choice for myself. Yeah. So I thought, okay, God, if you can just do it, you know, put this life back on the shelf, and, you know, later on when I'm in a better position, that's, you know, because I long to be a mom.
Yeah.
So.
And the miscarriage would make the decision for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And God did not answer that.
No.
So then what happened?
First my boyfriend at the time and I were intending to stay together, get married, have the baby. And I was sensing his hesitation after a while. And so I said, should we just have an abortion? And that was pretty much the decision from there.
Why did he hesitate?
He was trying to think about the responsibility. Finding a place for us, finishing school. Those were the concerns that I heard. I had my hesitations with, is this the right one?
Yeah.
Is this the right guy? Is this the way I want it to be? Is this the way I want my life to carry
These
out?
These are major questions.
Yeah.
And it's not like you have all the time in the world to mull these questions over. Like there's a countdown. There's a clock ticking here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of pressure to come up with the answers to these huge questions.
Yeah, it was hard. It was, and I would ignore it during the day, but at night that's when it would all come up, and it was overwhelming.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did it affect you at nighttime?
I remember just feeling heavy and just crying. And just wanting the easy way out, asking God to take the baby.
Mm. Yeah. Did you have anyone to cry with at that time?
I had two friends that I told, but not until after we had decided for sure that we were going to have the abortion. And they were friends that I felt would support that decision. And they also gave me this space that I kind of wanted. I think I would have been resistant, but thankful for them to really press in. But, you know, I can't expect that from them.
Yeah.
Realistically. But, so I kind of just told them this is what's happening. And,
I'm curious, were there other friends that you dare not share what you were wrestling with?
Sure.
I'd love to hear your experience of that.
Sure. There were friends that would have talked some sense into me, that would have really asked those questions, is this really what you want to do? And
That's a very loaded question, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is this really what you want to do? Because, like, with that mm-hmm. look that, you know, like, uh-huh. trying to kind of
yeah.
point you in one particular direction,
yeah.
right?
But they would force me to look at the part I was denying.
Yes, you're right. I feel torn. Like, I want to hear the rest of the story, and yet I've got so many questions about what you've already shared so far.
Uh-huh.
I mean, since we've got the momentum, maybe you can continue on in telling, like, mm-hmm. more like the skeleton of what happened, and then maybe
okay.
I can go back and kind of explore a little bit more about some
okay.
of the experiences themselves.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So we went, my mom and my boyfriend went with me to get the abortion, and I don't remember a whole lot. I just remember it being kind of a dingy place, or just feeling like, I don't want to be here. No one wanted to be there, of course. But there were women, I remember seeing, like, women my age and older, and just wondering what everyone's story was.
So, right, there is always a story to
yeah.
every one of those people in that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember waking up afterwards, and the first thing I asked was, how long did it take? I don't know why I wanted to know that, but they were like, oh, just a few minutes, and kind of hurrying me along.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you exit through the back door, and my ride was there, and went home and slept.
I don't know what the abortion process entails.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any part of it that you'd like to share to any other listeners? Like, what you remember of it?
Yeah. I remember signing papers beforehand.
Yeah.
I remember there was a part where I had to handwrite the sentence, this abortion is my choice.
Interesting.
And sign my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I hesitated to do that.
How long? How long did you hesitate for?
Probably just a few seconds,
because mm-hmm.
I just felt like I just need to get this done.
Yeah, It must have been like a ton of different thoughts in your head as you were hesitating during those few
yeah.
seconds.
Yeah, yes, because that's not really what I wanted. But
oh, so conflicted.
Yeah, yeah. I chose to be put under. So I was knocked out right away.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So that's an option.
That's an option, yes.
Oh.
So I'm thankful that, so I was out.
Yeah, so you
so
got no clue
yeah.
what's going on.
No.
Oh.
No.
Can I ask why you chose that option?
It's the easier way.
That seems to be a phrase that keeps popping up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Is the easier way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder whether we'll, you know, be able to explore that a little
mm-hmm.
bit more later on too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I would imagine that is the easier route.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you woke up.
I woke up.
You were wheeled out of the
yeah,
facility.
Escorted out.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we were on the way in, there were actually protesters standing in front of the clinic.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. So I just remember walking in and not looking at them and just looking at my feet and just keep walking through. So, yeah.
Can you share a little bit about what you were feeling as you saw them?
I was feeling condemnation.
Oh. Yeah.
I knew they were right.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it's wrong to take a life. But it wasn't what turned my heart, you know, around.
Mm. I knew they were right. I know it's wrong to take a life. But it wasn't what turned my heart around. I'm thinking of all of you listening who had an abortion.
I wonder if you felt the same way as Allison. People telling you what you were already thinking, it's wrong to take a life. I think at times like that, right and wrong often takes a back seat to more powerful emotions. Maybe in this case, fear. Oh, you must have been terrified. And on top of that, I can just imagine the self-hatred building up within you and the need to get away from people who are telling you what you already knew. What an isolating feeling. I wonder if you listening still feel that way today.
So you went home?
I went home and I slept, and I think 2 days later, mm-hmm. I went to my new apartment mm-hmm. in Irvine and went to school. I went to class. So I pretended like nothing happened. Mm. I was in complete denial because I even took like an infant development class that quarter.
And you're so kidding me.
And it didn't affect me at all. So, you know, we saw the fetus develop and talked about development from the very beginning, and it didn't hit me because I just turned it off.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then
I was also working at an after-school program on the campus, and I think one or two of the moms were pregnant, and so, you know, I saw the growing bellies.
Yeah.
And it didn't faze me at all.
No effect at all.
Our brains have this incredible ability to compartmentalize. We can sort of shut off memories and feelings while we go about our business. It's one of the reasons why so many people in the church can appear so put together, so high-functioning, while carrying horrendous and crippling memories and experiences in their brain. But it never really goes away. It leaks out one way or another in our relationships and in addictions and other behaviors until we reprocess them with God and in community, like Allison is about to share.
I was still dating that guy.
That guy, uh-huh.
And it wasn't till spring break.
Yeah.
I was part of InterVarsity, and we had a retreat. And I can't remember what we were studying, but the whole time I just felt God pressing on me, like in a loving way, what have you done?
Wow.
So even though it sounds accusing.
It sounds accusing, sure.
Very loving.
Yeah.
So none of my friends there knew at the time. And but I was just very convicted, okay, I need to share. So I decided first to share with our leader. And the last time I spoke to him in depth was telling him that I wanted to end this relationship.
Mm.
And now I have to tell him, oh, well, I didn't end it, but not only that, but this is where what it's come to. And he responded very lovingly. And just,
was your boyfriend also in the fellowship?
No.
Okay.
He was not in the fellowship.
Got
he was
it.
Not at, we were at different schools.
Okay. Oh, okay. Got it. Got it.
And and so he right away knew, okay, I need to find an accountability partner and someone that would do that job well, and end that relationship. So I think for the rest of that week, I started opening up to a handful of friends, and they were very supportive. And even still now, we are a very tight group, and we are not too far from each other.
Yeah,
we still get together, and those are
so
the
valuable.
Ones that I need to keep close to me because they have all my dirty laundry. But they are very loving and very supportive.
The reason why you broke up with him was what?
Well, I knew it wasn't a healthy relationship.
Okay.
He was not following God's heart.
Mm.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
He was a lot of fun. We
sure.
would hang out.
Yeah.
You know, he's fun to hang out with.
But you really wanted to find someone who could follow after God like you were trying to follow after God.
Yes. So shortly after I shared with my friends, and I got an accountability partner, and she was really good. She helped me, even just like things that I couldn't really express, she helped put into words. Mm. I also shared with the church that I was a part of, the church that I grew up in, yeah. and my parents attend, and I shared with our youth leaders, and they responded very lovingly.
Wait, so Allison, how did you work up, how did you get motivated to share with these people?
Well, I had all these positive experiences.
Oh.
So I shared with that first leader.
Yeah.
And there was no condemnation. There was and freedom.
That first leader was prompted by God telling you with a loving voice, mm-hmm. like, what have you done? Mm-hmm. You're saying that was...
I got that from God, straight from God. What have you done?
God spoke to you lovingly in that way.
Uh-huh.
And that was the motivation for you to share with that first leader?
Yes.
Okay. And then because you got a positive, non-judgmental response from him,
mm-hmm.
it springboarded into being able to tell other people as well?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yes. And then...
Wow.
Every time I shared my story,
yeah.
there was so much freedom. And then there was... that place of feeling like, okay, my everything is just that big mess of me is out in the open, but there is love and acceptance. So, yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
Hey everyone, just a quick break to tell you about SA Speakeasy. It's a new podcast to help men and women struggling with sex addiction. But it's really more than a podcast. It's a community where you can anonymously share your story of sex addiction mess and be met with love and acceptance. This can be that powerful starting point of your journey to recovery. You can find SA Speakeasy on any podcast app and subscribe today. Now back to today's story.
So even at the invitation to come here and share my story, mm-hmm. there's a bit of doubt,
yeah.
and a bit of, oh, what if so-and-so hears, and I'd rather tell them myself rather than, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I didn't share, then the shame and isolation will get bigger and stronger
wow.
and take over.
Wow.
So this is a part of how we fight, I think.
I agree. I felt the same way as I was sharing my testimony in, what is it, episode, like, 0 or 1.
Mm-hmm.
That's that same feeling that mm-hmm. There's a healing experience that happens when you're able to share something that you've for so long kind of kept
mm-hmm.
secret.
Yeah.
Such as my rebellion against God, my hatred of him,
mm-hmm.
and just to be able to share that and know that there are those who are thankful that I was able to share
mm-hmm.
that. It just motivates me to share that even more with other people
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
So you shared with the youth group.
Yes.
What was the response like?
Oh, youth
leader.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the response like there?
Again, very loving.
Mm-hmm.
They cried with me.
Mm.
And I really appreciated that. And I felt very loved. And that it's okay to mourn the loss. Yeah. They also... asked if they could share with our senior pastor and reach out to my parents, which I said was okay. I'm not sure, even now, I'm not sure exactly how my parents felt about that.
Uh-huh.
Or if they, you know, had a conversation, what was that like? But I felt like it's such a great thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, you haven't mentioned your dad yet.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a time that your dad found out and what was that like?
Okay. Okay. Yes. My mom, was the one that told my dad that I was pregnant.
Oh.
And this is before, this might have been after we decided to have the abortion.
After the decision, okay.
So she's the one that told him. He came out of the room and he hugged me. He told me he loved me. Which I know is really hard for him to do. And I felt like he was sad for me, with me, for the situation, and not that he was disappointed in me. So,
God bless your dad.
Yeah.
And your mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really, really thankful for that. And then it wasn't till later on, this is maybe a few years later, my dad had mentioned about some kind of a conference that he was going to, and he wanted me to go with him, so I said okay. And they had mentioned something about how the dynamics of a family, and if just how like someone might take on stress and lash out on someone else, and it just falls down. So that was his way of starting to talk about how he was very sorry as a leader of the family for the choice to have an abortion, which floored me. I would not have expected that from him.
Yeah.
And I told him, you know, I took that responsibility. Yeah. It was my choice. But that was, I liken it to like when you're doing a jigsaw puzzle and pieces are all kind of floating around. And when you find that one important piece that fits everything together, or there's that one piece that, you know, you kind of understand, oh, no, this is at the top, not the bottom.
Yes.
And it orients everything. So that was like the one piece that I needed.
After looking back, like, why do you think that is? Why do you think that was the piece that really tied things together for you? Because I could feel how significant it was.
Yeah, yeah. And I would never have... I wasn't walking around thinking, that's the one thing I needed.
Exactly.
I had no idea.
Exactly.
I think part of it is just that order of, you know, as leader of the home and of the family... Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that it was his responsibility or that he should have stopped me, because I would never say that was him. But I think for him to step up and to say that was big. Yeah.
It's quite I mean, as I think about it too, it just feels like it's just such a leadership gesture. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of cements him as the caring leader of the family. And I think that's such a, it's the kind of act that promotes a lot of feelings of security that, wow, I'm under his care.
Yeah. Yes.
Rather than him blowing up at you and saying, how could you, and you're not my daughter, and all the kind of the horror stories that you hear out there, you know? Wow, that just sounds really significant.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
For those of you who are parents, if your teenage daughter one day told you that she was pregnant, how would you respond? How would you respond if Jesus were in the room? What if she told you that she had had an abortion? Allison said that a loving woman shared with her a book full of stories of women who had abortions.
I think shortly after that, I think it was the same lady that let me know about a post-abortion support group and study that was being offered. And so within the same year, I had my abortion in January. Mm-hmm. And in the fall, I was a part of this class.
Yeah.
And it was very intense.
Where was it held at?
Anaheim Vineyard Church. Yes, they were hosting it.
Yeah.
And,
Because I don't know too many post-abortion classes, groups out there.
No.
Especially in the church. I don't really hear about that too much.
Yeah. I have no idea how she found it.
Yeah.
but it was an amazing time. It was 12 weeks. There was homework. We talked about different topics. I think we started talking about God as our Father and the character of God.
Mm.
We talked about spiritual aspects of abortion, sexual aspects, emotional aspects. Eventually forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, anger, depression.
Wow.
A lot of
really comprehensive.
Yes. Yes, it was very good. She had healing prayer was a big part of it. It was a very, I felt like it was a big growing time. That's when I really got to know the Bible, and I was surprised that there were things in a Bible for the post-abortive woman. I remember some of the big aha moments were just simple truths like, oh, God loves me. But that was powerful for me to understand in that state that God would still love me. Also, that how much I need others. And I tried to be the one, beforehand, I tried to be the one that would help other people all the time, but never ask for the help. But I was at the point where I had to ask for help, and it was good. Thankfully, God had a good support team for me already. Those were some big,
growing moments. Sounds like an amazing group.
Yes. Yes, it was really good.
How many women were in that group?
There might have been like 30 of us total. However, she had been running this group for quite some time.
Yeah.
So she had a lot of support. So that includes the small group leaders. So in my small group, there were three of us, and I was 20 at the time, and the others were about my age.
Mm-hmm.
There were two small group leaders, and then there were also maybe one or two intercessors at the time.
Wow.
And so they, their job was just to intercede and not talk to us. At the very end, one of them did, she had a word for me at the very end.
Yeah.
But there were also alumni that had gone through it already that I was given her information so I could have reached out to her. I didn't at the time. I wish I did.
Yeah.
But she had the agenda, so she knew how to pray for me. She knew what I was going through each week.
Yeah.
And she would leave messages for me, still letting me know she was there for me. So it was a great...
That makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't alone. There's others. There are others that have gone before me and others journeying along with me.
Yeah.
30 women. How would you feel if you were in a group of 30 others who had a story like your own? The story could be abortion, sex addiction, boundary issues with parents, substance abuse. I pray that these are the stories that are shared within the church.
Can I ask a difficult question?
Yes.
After the abortion, how often did you think about your baby that you aborted?
Mm-hmm.
And if when you did think about your baby, what were your thoughts about your baby?
I thought about my baby often.
Mm.
I would have dreams with the baby.
What kind of dreams?
Dreams where I was taking care of him. I believe it was a boy. And part of the class was, so at the end, they don't tell you at the very beginning, but towards the end, there's a memorial service because we want to acknowledge the loss. And
wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. So they have us pray about, see if God reveals if it was a boy or girl and naming the baby. So, I believe the baby was a boy, and I named him Michael.
Hmm.
And in the, for the service, they have us prepare to share about whatever we want to share about. And, some people would share about their hopes and dreams and what they think their child would have grown up to do and be interested in. And I really didn't know what to share. So I think on my paper, I just wrote, Honor Michael. And I think I just rambled for quite some time. One hard thing was mourning the loss of motherhood. Wanting to be a mom all that time and having that taken away. And wanting to nurture my baby.
Yeah.
Most recently, about a couple years ago, I was going through healing prayer, and it just came up, you know, for me to visualize my baby, what's he doing. And I just got a quick image, but it gave me a lot of peace and assurance. And it was like he had come to visit me and spend time with me. And then Jesus came, and they got up and they put their arms around each other and just started walking off. Like, we got stuff to do. Like, okay, yeah, lady, you know, we're sorry for your loss, but we got stuff to do. Don't be sorry for me, you know. So I kind of had that reassurance that he's busy doing God's work.
What an amazing vision.
I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing, but one day I'll find out.
Wow. Oh, I feel like I just need to kind of soak that one in. If we circle back to this theme that kept popping up, is the easy way. What do you think God's been trying to tell you and teach you about you and about life and about himself, and especially as it relates to the easy way?
Okay. I didn't catch this connection, but yeah, that's a good question. I feel like more recently, God has been challenging me to use my voice and use my words, which is not easy for me. You know, it's very natural for me to just go with the flow or be the wallflower and let others make this decision and I'll just go along. But that's not what God has for me. And I'm starting to learn that and to step into those shoes, because I keep thinking, you know, I'm not the leader type, or I'm not the type to make those choices and to do the difficult things, but I'm seeing that is part of what God is calling me into.
Wow.
Even though there's doubts and fears, and this is one thing that when I left, my husband gave me this word that having faith doesn't mean to be without doubt.
Amen.
Yeah. Even though you have the doubts, you just keep going.
Amen.
Because we could trust what God has for us. And
that's
if
right.
He's calling us to do it, then we just got to show up.
Yeah. And then you end up getting married, and now you have two boys of your own.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like actually being pregnant again? Mm-hmm. And this time, you know, carrying it all the way through to actual delivery. What was that like for you?
You know, at first I had, I was a bit anxious, thinking that things were going to come up, or there would be complications, or fears that what if God takes this baby away from me?
Oh.
Well,
that's interesting, because the first time you praying for a miscarriage, right, with Michael.
Yes.
But this time it's like, oh no, God, what if you give me a miscarriage?
Yes.
Or what if you allow a miscarriage to happen? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, or yeah, as punishment or... But you know, when I went through the class, it was within a year of having the abortion.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful that, that I was able to experience that healing, before having my own son. Because I've heard of other people who didn't, and if it's not resolved, it keeps kind of coming up. So thankfully, like, the pregnancy, even the timing was similar to when I was to the first pregnancy. Like, I think the expected due date was pretty much within the week from each other, from the aborted,
the
aborted pregnancy to my first son.
Wow.
But I didn't have, like, the fear and anxiety while I was pregnant. The morning sickness was not so bad. Like, you know, even little things like that.
Yeah.
I was very thankful along the way that I was still pregnant. Yeah, because I, you know, there could be complications along the way, but you know, there weren't. So I was thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when did you find out? Because you say that your older and both your boys have the older one has autism. Mm-hmm. The second one has.
He doesn't really have a diagnosis, okay. So I have a theory that he had a complicated delivery.
Okay.
So I have a theory that like that caused some brain trauma, and that was
got it.
Some difficulty for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah. So your first one, mm-hmm. The autism, usually you find that out after like age, what, 3 or 4 or something, mm-hmm. something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we noticed with him that he had delays, probably around 1 or 2
yeah.
years old, and we got he got early intervention
mm-hmm.
when he was 2.
Yeah.
And then when he was 3, that's when we got the diagnosis for autism.
How'd you react when you found out the diagnosis?
It was I have had experience working with children with autism.
Right.
So it was good.
Oh.
It was a good news because there's a plan.
Yeah.
And there's something that we can do. And
yeah.
I was familiar, very familiar with one of those
Some
ways.
Puzzle pieces fit
yeah.
there, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's very fortunate to have a mom who mm-hmm. knows and uh-huh. who empathizes and understands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. As we wrap up, and again, I'm so thankful how honest, you know, you are being with all these questions. But I really wanted this interview because I know that there are many women out there who have had an abortion,
mm-hmm.
and God only knows how they're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Having gone through one yourself, what would you like to say to women who have had an abortion?
That there's hope, that there's healing. It's easy to think that I as a woman who chose an abortion, I deserve the shame. I need to hide this. I need to make up for my sins by doing these good things. It seems to make sense. However, that's not what God has for us. And so what I would want to say is that you're not damaged goods, that God sees you and loves you, that he has a great purpose for you, and that he wants you to let go of that shame and to experience the freedom and power, that the story you have is powerful. Yeah, I think it's easy to accept the worst or the leftovers when we feel like we're damaged goods, but that's not who we are.
I hope something you heard today helped you feel like you're not alone, that there are others in the same boat as you. If you'd like to experience the power and healing of a group like Allison did, contact me. And I will do whatever I can to start one for you. You can email me at roy@newlegacycounseling.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, please visit patreon.com/thesameboat to find out how. And please remember to leave a review on iTunes. Thank you for joining me today on The Same Boat. Please disembark safely. Today's song credits go to Nathan Baldwin, who created and produced original theme music. Follow Nathan on Instagram @TheNathanBaldwin. Ben Bon Can @freesound.org for 4 bells, ship time. Airport Lounge, Andrea's theme, Angel Share, Hard Boiled, and Work by Kevin McLeod on incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. The podcast logo was designed by Heyun Chong. You can follow her on Instagram @hye.yoon. This podcast is not meant to be taken as professional counseling advice, nor is it meant to be a substitute for professional therapy or pastoral counsel.